We're up to Shmuel, what they call the seventh chapter. The ark was brought up to Kiryat Yarim, and they establish it by a man whose name is Avinadav, and he is blessed. Doesn't say here what the blessing was. In Chronicles, in Divrei Yamim, it records that he became this huge family. I think it says there that his wife and his daughters-in-law, each one gave birth to six kids at a time, like what's that called, hextuplets, right? So there was this unusual blessing suddenly, the exact opposite of what happened to the Philistines, and the ark is there. David will take the ark from Kiryat Yarim and bring it up towards Jerusalem. So Shmuel gathers the people. He is now the recognized prophet of the time. And he tells them, you have to do tshuva and remove the idols you have and the trees you've planted in the names of idols and focus on serving Hashem. And then Hashem will help you against the Philistines. So they do that. And Shmuel gathers them to a place called Mitzpah and he prays to Hashem. And they fast and they do tshuva. And Shmuel convenes his court, and they answer questions, and they help people figure out where they should do tshuva. And this is all preparatory for war. The Philistines hear that the Jews are preparing for war. So the leaders of the Philistines, the Sarnei Pelishtim, they lead them to battle. And the Jews get very scared. And they tell Shmuel, Davin, Hashem should save us from the Philistines. And Shmuel takes a young sheep and he sacrifices it and he prays to Hashem. And as he's sacrificing the animal, so the Philistines attack. And Hashem makes great noise, shock the Philistines, and they are stunned. And when the Jews go out to fight them, they're successful. And they start defeating the Philistines and they're giving chase. And Shmuel establishes a stone and he says, this is the point, until here we've succeeded in battle today. And he calls it Even HaEzer, the stone of Hashem's assistance. And at that point, that was the turning point. Once we were victorious at that battle, the Philistines started being subservient to us. And the Jews took back ownership of the port cities of Ekron and Gat, and with that we enter an era of peace. So the Navi tells us a summary of Shmuel's life, as though Shmuel's life is now going to end. Shmuel will be with us for many more chapters, but the Navi describes how every year Shmuel would go around Israel educating the people, and wherever he'd go, he'd take whatever he needed with him, and he'd always come back to his home territory, to the Ramah. Now, Chazal say that this was what the Jewish people needed. Our sages say that the downfall of the Jewish people in the period of Pilegesh Begiv'ah, you remember the civil war that was there? Our sages say that was because the leaders didn't do what Shmuel did. Meaning Shmuel is doing what the people need. He's traveling to educate the people and help them do tshuva. And now we're up to what they call the eighth chapter. Yes?
They are talking about Shmuel and said the Nafi. When you say the Nafi, you mean Shmuel.
Yes. Okay, Shmuel establishes his children as the judges, the leaders after him. His eldest son is Yoel. According to some opinions, he is the prophet Yoel that appears in Treasar, the 12 short prophets. Yoel is the one that prophesies about a great plague of locusts that will attack. And according to some, it's a metaphor for the Babylonian army that will swoop down and destroy Israel. We are uncertain as to when that prophet Yoel lived, and according to some, he lived right now. He was the son of Shmuel. So even though the Navi will describe that Shmuel's sons, Yoel and Aviah, are inappropriate, they are transgressing, our sages say they had a minuscule sin, and the Navi portrayed it as something major. What was their sin? That the Navi writes, they took bribes. And so their judgment was tainted. Our sages say they they figured, why should we travel like our father did? If we stay in one city, then we will help the economy of that city. Everyone will travel to that city to learn from us. And then we will help the scribes, we will help the different people who get jobs because we are in one place. And that was a mistake. Chazal say they should not have made that calculation. How do I help this individual or that individual? Their jobs as judges was to help the masses, help the people of Israel. And that's why the Navi describes it as they went after bribes. Their decision was tainted. Tainted over here doesn't really mean they took a bribe. It means their decision was tainted by a miscalculation. So the Jews come to Shmuel. And they tell him, you know, you're an old man, and your kids aren't as good as you, and so we want a king. So Shmuel feels very bad. And he prays to Hashem, and Hashem tells him, listen to them. It's not you they're disgusted with, it's me. They've been doing this from the day I took them out of Egypt. But listen to them, just warn them what a king will do to them. So Shmuel warns them, he says, and from here we learn, from what Shmuel warns them, we learn many of the laws of what a king can do. He tells them, he will tax you, he will take your children and put them in his army and in charge of his chariots. He will take your children and give them the responsibility of taking care of his field. If it's plowing, if it's harvesting, if it's preparing armor and weapons, your daughters will be responsible for cooking for him. Your fields and vineyards, your orchards he will take and give his gifts to his servants, and he will tax everything you produce in order to pay off his servants, and he will take your chosen servants and children and cattle and bring them to do his work. He will take your sheep. You will all be enslaved to the king, and then you'll cry to Hashem because your king is taxing you, and Hashem won't answer you then. And the nation refuses to listen. They say the time has come for a king. And we want to be like all the nations. Our king should judge us and lead us to war. Shmuel hears them, and Hashem says, listen to them. So Shmuel tells them, go home, we will deal. And now we will learn about Shaul. There's a great discussion among our sages. There's a pasuk later on that says, Ben Shana Shaul b'molcho. King Saul had been king for a year. Literally, it means he was 1 year old when he became king. Ushtaim Shana Malach al Yisrael. And he was king over Israel for 2 years. So some say, all the stories of Shaul and Shaul and David, everything took place in a span of 2 years. Everything we're going to learn for the next 15 chapters, many marvelous stories, they all took place in a span of 2 years. Others say, no, it means in this setting, in the setting it speaks there, that happened after 2 years. But really, his kingdom lasted longer. When Shaul dies, he leaves behind a son who's 40 years old. So, let's say Shaul is 60. Shaul has grandchildren when he dies. Now, when we start the story of Shaul, he's assisting his own father. So that certainly, he sounds like a youngster. He's looking for his father's donkeys. So it sounds like he's a young man. Doesn't even sound like he's married. Our sages say he was married. He got married with the story of Pelegesh Begivah. He was one of the 600 warriors who came out alive from the war with the concubine on the hilltop. We learned the story how his wife chased after him and took him for her husband. So Shaul is not a youngster, even though the story sounds like he's very young. He has children, one of which is close to 40 years old, 38 years old at this point. That's if we assume Shaul was king for all of 2 years. So our story begins with a man named Kish, and he is a very brave warrior. Obviously, if he made it out of that war, everyone else got wiped out, and they were all good warriors, right? Remember, in Pelegesh Begivah, the tribe of Benjamin defeated Israel twice. So, Kish was an extraordinary warrior. So was his son, Shaul. And Shaul was the best Jew. Shaul was such a tzaddik that after he dies, David HaMelech speaks, he writes a psalm about him. And Hashem tells him, why are you talking that way about Shaul? If the roles were reversed, I'd kill you many times in honor of Shaul. You happen to have been born the way that you were born, so you're going to end up being the Davidic dynasty. But had he being in your place and you in his place, you'd be dead many times because of him. He is very, very pious. And David composes another psalm, Shigayon le David, Asher Shar al Divrei Kush ben Yamini, my error. David composes a psalm asking forgiveness for erring in the way he spoke about Shaul. So Shaul is extraordinarily pious till the day he dies. He will be plagued at the end of his life with depression. The Rishonim call it melancholia, which is another word for sadness. Shaul is challenged with mental anguish at the end of his life, and he is held accountable only for one transgression, which we will speak about later. I shouldn't say only for one, but there's one that does him in. And Shaul is one of the unique people who is called Kush. Kush means unusual, extraordinary. He was extraordinary in his piety. The Jewish people are called Kushiyim. Yirmiyahu Baruch Ben Neria, or Yirmiyahu, is called Kush. So there was a man from the tribe of Benjamin. Shaul is the son of this great man, Kish. And Shaul is a head taller than anyone. No Jew reaches his head. Everyone else only reached his shoulder. And when his father's donkeys, that's what it sounds like, sounds literal, yeah. When his father's donkeys were lost, so he tells him, take a lad and go look for the donkeys. So he goes again through where? Har Ephraim, the mountainous regions of Ephraim. Here we meet those mountainous regions once again. For 3 days, they can't find it. So let's look at our maps for a second. Those who would like, there are maps for everyone here.
What does Kish mean again?
Kish is a name. Kush. Chof Vav Shin. Right, there's a country named Kush. Kushu Mitzrayim Ufutu Chinan were the sons of Cham. Okay, so here we have Benjamin territory, right? And right above Benjamin territory is Ephraim territory. So for whatever reason, they assumed the donkeys had run northward into Ephraim territory. Okay? So they're looking and they can't find it. And they come to a place called the Land of Tzuf. Now if we look back to the beginning of the book of Shmuel, Shmuel is called Ben Elkanah ben Yerucham ben Eliyahu ben Tohu ben Tzuf. So some want to say Tzuf is the land of Tzufim. That's where Shmuel was. And Shaul says, let's go back because I don't want my father to stop worrying about the donkeys and start worrying about us. He's humble. He speaks as though they're equals. Dad will start worrying about us. Which again, sounds like he was a young person, not like he was 38 years old. But that's not true. Even as we age, our parents care about us as though we were youngsters. So the lad says, the man of God is in this city, and whatever he says comes true. Let's go ask him. And here we see that people used to access the prophet to ask him about their own lives. Last week the question was asked whether in ancient times people used psychologists or therapists or got some kind of help. And I quoted this as one of the sources that you see people spoke to the prophet about many personal matters as well. And then we spoke about the Gra, that they spoke about their personal growth and how to work out their personality issues or their direction in working Hashem, in serving Hashem. We discussed the Gra on that. So, Shaul tells the lad, it's not nice to show up without a gift, and we're all out of everything. So the lad says, I have a quarter of a shekel, I'll give it to him, and he'll tell us what's going on. So Shaul tells the lad, okay, good idea. They go. They come to the city, and Shmuel was expecting them. He already arranged a party. He told all the elders of the city to come to this party. They prepared meat and a big, lavish meal. Shaul and the lad come to the city, and there are a bunch of young maidens going out to draw water from the well. And he asked them, is the seer over here? Until this day, the Navi was called the seer, Haroeh. So they're going to talk a lot. They're going to say, yes, he's here. Go quickly, because today he came. Because today there's this big party. When you enter the city, you'll find him. Before he goes up to the platform, that's where they're eating. No one's going to eat before he comes. He makes the blessing over the sacrifice. Only after that they're going to eat. So you guys better go now, because you'll find them now. Chazal said, why were they talking so much? So girls talk. Chazal say he was good looking, so they wanted to enjoy his looks, so they kept talking. Chazal say there's an exact moment when a person's supposed to go up to greatness, and Shaul was supposed to be detained those few seconds. So Hashem made it that they spoke longer. So they enter the city. Shmuel goes out to greet them. Hashem has told him that they'd come at this time tomorrow, and that he's supposed to anoint him as the ruler of Israel. He will save them from the Philistines. Shmuel sees Shaul, and Hashem tells him, there's the man that I told you about. He will unite the people to success. So Shaul approaches Shmuel, and he asks him, can you tell me please, where's the house of the seer? And Shmuel answers, I am the seer. So Shmuel was a very modest person. In this sentence, he was a drop-off. He shouldn't have said it that way. So Hashem will replay this scene. The same scene will happen in 2 years, when David will be brought to be anointed by Shmuel. So we're going to have the same scene in reverse. Right? In this scene, what happens? Shmuel prepares the party, and Shaul shows up. Shaul shows up, and Hashem told Shmuel, go out and greet him. As Shaul enters the city, Hashem tells Shmuel, that's the man. And he goes up and says, who's the seer? He says, I am the seer. Now let's fast forward 2 years. Instead of Shaul coming to Shmuel, Shmuel now goes to Yishai's house. Hashem has told Shmuel that in Yishai's children is supposed to be the next king. He comes to Yishai's house. Instead of initiating the meal, the elders of Yishai's community prepare a meal. So now Shmuel isn't the honorable one preparing the meal. They're preparing the meal in his honor. Shmuel walks in and the children are brought before him. So he sees the big one, the eldest, who is tall and good looking, and he says, wow, there's the one Hashem loves who's to be anointed. And Hashem says, don't look at his height, don't look at his good looks, I hate him. He's an arrogant person. And Shmuel keeps missing it, and then 6 children come before him, and none are to be anointed, and yet he thought he knew who was to be anointed. And then he asks, Hatamu Anarim? Have we finished seeing all your kids, Yishai? So Yishai says, oh, there's still the little one. We left him out in the sheep. Yishai's all embarrassed because there were questions about who had fathered David. And so everyone's trembling now that David's going to be brought in and Shmuel the prophet will reveal what had happened. They're scared he's going to say that David is a bastard, a mamzer. And they bring in David. So David is called in from the sheep. And as he approaches, Shmuel looks up and he sees David and his skin is red. And he sees tremendous strength, this tall young man who is capable of killing. And he starts trembling. And he says, oh no, Ribon Shalom, Esav's coming. And the Ribon Shalom says, why are you sitting, Shmuel? Stand up. My chosen one is walking into the room and you're sitting? Get up and anoint him. The exact opposite from this scene. In this scene, Shaul had come to him. He was prepared and he was able to anoint Shaul and he's anticipated Shaul. In the story of David, Hashem wants to help Shmuel correct a slight error in what Shmuel had done, that he said, I am the seer, and so Hashem reverses the whole scene. Shmuel comes to Ishai, they prepare the meal, Shmuel makes a mistake, and then when they bring David, Shmuel is confident that's not the one, and Hashem tells him, get up, that's him. It was to help Shmuel correct this slight transgression.
Do
so,
we know how old David was at that point? David?
Let's do the math backwards. David dies, passes away at the age of 70. He will be king for 40 and a half years. Okay, Hebron and Yerushalayim, 33 plus 7 and a half. So you get to 40 and a half. So that puts David at 29 and a half when he ascends to the throne. What we're uncertain about is, do the first years with Ish-bosheth also count? And do we count from the time he was anointed? Or do we count from the time he ascended to the throne? It would seem like we only count from the time he ascended to the throne. So then how many years earlier was this story? Well, if Shaul was alive a total of 2 years, so then it couldn't have been more than a half a year, a year beforehand. So David at this point is, it would seem, is in his 20s. That doesn't work so well, because again, why wasn't David in the armed forces?
Yeah, because when you fight with Goliath, right, he seems like he's a kid.
Right. That's why it's difficult to say that King Saul's reign was only 2 years.
Yeah, because he was 40 years old son.
Which
right.
He had to go to army.
But Mephibosheth is not the oldest. I think the oldest was Jonathan.
Yeah, fair.
Jonathan was killed in the battle. And Mephibosheth during that time is 40 years old.
Yeah, fair.
So maybe Jonathan is 45 or 50. So King Saul should be 70 or more.
Yeah, fair. So Shmuel tells him, you're joining me for the meal on the platform, and tomorrow morning I'll send you and I'll tell you everything you want to know. Don't worry about those donkeys that they were found already, but you should know everyone in Israel is coveting one thing right now. Everyone wants to be the king, and you and your family. And Shaul says, but I'm from the tribe of Benjamin. We're the smallest tribe right now, right? Benjamin has just been wiped out in the civil war of Pelegish Begiva. Why are you telling me such a thing? So Shmuel takes Shaul and the lad, and he brings them, and he has them sitting at the head table. All the elders are there, and there are about 30 people there at the meal. And Shmuel had told the chef to prepare a huge piece of meat for Shaul, and when we say huge, we're talking about literally like this big. It says the leg of an animal. I don't know if you guys ever carried that. That's very heavy. I wasn't able to carry it. It's very heavy. What?
Is it all cooked already?
Yeah. Shaul eats with Shmuel. And then Shmuel invites him up to the roof, away from the lad, and he starts telling him his responsibilities. He's going to be king. Early in the morning, again, he takes him up to the rooftop, and then they go to speak, and they start leaving the city, and Shmuel tells Shaul, tell the lad to go forward. He shouldn't hear what's going on. So Shmuel and Shaul are standing alone. It's an interesting scene. We see here the two kings of Israel are anointed in a very private setting. Shaul is anointed alone with Shmuel. David will be anointed also in a private setting. He puts the oil on his head. Which oil? Our tradition is that this was not the Shemina Mishcha, that he used Shemina Farsimon. Shmuel knew that the long-term dynasty would have to come from David, and that the anointment of Shaul was short term. And so Shmuel, when he anoints David, he anoints him with a horn. A horn is open on both sides. So a horn, a shofar, represents something that has continuity, like something that can flow through. And Shaul was anointed with a flask, And Shaul was anointed with Shem and Afar Simon. So Shmuel kisses him. Chazal say there are three kisses of meaning in life. A kiss of closeness, that represents family, people are close. A kiss of two people who depart one from one another. And a kiss when a person is brought into greatness, where Shaul is now brought into greatness. So we see Yaakov kissed Rachel out of closeness. He was her cousin. Arpa kissed Naomi when she left her. Ruth stayed with her. Arpa left. That's a kiss of departure. And here we have a kiss that Shmuel is bringing Shaul into greatness. And so he is anointed, and Shmuel kisses Shaul, and he says, now you were anointed by Hashem to be the ruler of his people. When you leave me today, you will meet two people by Kever Rachel. Here we see a mention of Kever Rachel in the Navi. And this is in the border of Benjamin in a place called Tzel Tzach. You guys have to figure out what Tzel Tzach is. And they will tell you that the donkeys were found. And they'll tell you your father's no longer worried about the donkeys. He is worried about you guys. He's worried, where's my son? And then you'll come to Elon Tavor. There'll be three people on their way to worship before Hashem in Beitel. One will be carrying three goats. One will be carrying three loaves of bread. One will be carrying a flask of wine. They will greet you in peace, and they will give you two loaves of bread. Accept them. And then you'll come to the hilltop where people serve Hashem, and where the Philistines are there. You will meet a group of prophets who are coming towards you, and they will have music playing to keep them in good spirits as they prophesize. And then you too will get prophecy, and from that moment onward you will feel like you're a different person. And then you should know that once these signs came true, you have been appointed the prophet, and start acting. You have been appointed the king. I'm sorry, you should start acting and leading the people. Now, when the time comes to go to war against the Philistines, war will begin when you go down to Gilgal. And you will wait for me. After 7 days, I will come and bring a sacrifice. And I will direct you how to go to war against the Philistines. And that is my final warning. And Shmuel warns Shaul, your ability to be king is contingent on your listening to this prophecy. And this is where Shaul will fail. When the Philistines attack him later on, he has waited 7 days, and he has to wait for Shmuel another few minutes to bring the sacrifice, and Shmuel is nowhere to be seen, and under pressure, seeing the Philistines attack, Shaul will bring the sacrifice, and this is a transgression of what the Navi warned him. The Navi said, wait for me. We will bring together, and I'll instruct you how to go to war. So Shaul leaves and he feels like a different person. All the prophecy comes true. And people started saying, Hagam Shaul Banevi'im, is Shaul also a prophet? Till today people use that as a term, and so-and-so really is great. So we didn't know he was so great. Hagam Shaul Banevi'im. So Shaul's uncle asks him when he comes home, where'd you guys go? So he said, we went looking for the donkeys. And when we couldn't find them, we asked Shmuel. So he says, what did the prophet tell you? So Shaul says, he told us that the donkeys were found. And he omits the story of his being appointed king. And here we see Shaul's modesty. So Shmuel gathers the people. And he says, you should know, Hashem says he took you out of Egypt. And you've been disgraceful. You're saying you don't want Hashem. You want a king as an out. You figure under a king you're going to get away with doing whatever you want. But okay, Hashem has agreed to give you a king. We're going to draw lots. They draw lots. Out comes the tribe of Benjamin. They draw lots within the tribe. Out comes the family of Matri. There's Sfardim today that have that last name, Mishpachat HaMatri, and within that family, Shaul is the one whose lot is drawn. So they say, okay, Shaul, step forward, and no one can find Shaul. Shaul went hiding under the coats. So they ask Hashem, where is Shaul? And they get the answer, he's hiding by the coats. So they go and they summon him. Shaul didn't want the job. And when he stands up, everyone sees he's taller than everyone else. So they're all looking up to him. Why is that important? There is an element that a leader has to give the feeling to others that he's the leader. Leadership is not only about having the qualities of knowing what to do and being smart and being talented and everything. It's also about giving the feeling that you're a leader. That's a component in deciding who should be a leader. So everyone looked up to him. So, I didn't hear you. Shmuel tells the people, you see the one Hashem chose? Everyone praises him, long live the king. Why do we say long live the king? Because our tradition is HaRabanut Koveret Et Be'alea. Leadership causes a person to die younger. So that's why he always needs to be blessed. He should live long. And Shmuel goes over the laws of having a king. They write it down, they record it. Shmuel sends them home. Shaul goes home. And people start going with him out of respect. And then some people who are not God-fearing people, they say, what's he worth? What's he going to save us? And Shaul makes believe he didn't hear. And our sages say that when a Talmid Chacham is insulted, he has a responsibility to stand up for the honor of Torah. And if he does not, then he is wrong. That's, we learned this in Rabbeinu Yonah on Friday, and our sages say right here, Shaul is going to be attacked by Nachash, the king of Ammon, whose name is Nachash, and our sages say this is a punishment because he didn't respond. He shouldn't have let them get away with it. And this is where we're up to. We'll pick up here maybe tomorrow or next week.